Hello and welcome to another Sick Career Podcast. Today I am super excited to have a former colleague of mine, now a friend, Annie Ma Weaver. She has a very illustrious career going on nearly 14 years at Google. Very interesting career path. We'll be talking about that shortly. Annie, love to have you introduce yourself and tell the Sick Career audience a little bit about who you are.
Thanks, Alan. I'm based in the Bay Area in San Francisco. I work at Google, and I've had a very diverse career path while at Google, but also before. I tried a lot of different things. I was definitely someone who didn't come into undergrad with a clear idea of what I wanted to be when I grew up. In some ways, I feel like I'm still figuring that out. When I was at Columbia, where I went to undergrad, I did a number of different internships to try to explore different areas. I did an internship in management consulting for the Scottish government. I was based out of Glasgow, and I worked with a couple of small businesses in the Helensburgh area, which is a town outside of Glasgow. I also worked in investment banking for Deutsche Bank in Hong Kong. Fun fact, originally from China, so I speak Mandarin as a first language, and I worked with mainland clients from the Hong Kong office. But then after I graduated, the first job I had was doing behavioral economics research at the Columbia Business School Center for Decision Sciences. I doubled in neuroscience and economics. I thought I would pursue a PhD in behavioral economics, and so that's where I was applying myself when Google reached out and asked if I'd be interested in trying something completely different in Mountain View out in California. And I thought, sure, why not? I'm fresh out of undergrad. I'm in the middle of a New York winter, being paid a very modest salary at this point with no health insurance. And so I relocated and started at Google. And this was just about 14 years ago. The then nascent new to the company division called Google Enterprise, which was our B2B apps productivity suite for companies rather than for consumers. And from there, starting in that first role, I was doing Gmail contacts and chat support. So back then, if you wanted to troubleshoot what was happening with your Google business account, you could call a number and you could reach someone like me who would help look through your MX headers, look through your contacts logs and figure out what were the issues, why things were being mischaracterized as spam, why messages were being bounced, et cetera. To continue after, I realize that this is going a bit long, but support for a while. Then I wound up leading a support team, managing a team of vendors, launching a site for that based out of Latin America. I wound up then managing partners who were delivering support and a team of partner managers. I then transitioned to sales ops. I was chief of staff for an SVP, our COO for enterprise, working very closely with her on all sorts of annual planning and strategy and OKRs, OPEX, headcount budgets, our QBRs, strategic offsites, et cetera. And working with her, working in that capacity, I realized I wanted to really expand my knowledge of business, that I wanted to learn more about what it is that senior leaders need to do or what they do from both like a practitioner sense and that I was working in the business, but also from an academic perspective. So that's when I applied for and eventually got a part-time MBA from Berkeley Haas, which I did while I was working full-time at Google. And then after I graduated from that, I switched again to business development, this time for Google Cloud, which is what enterprise had become. So I looked after financial services, healthcare, life sciences, manufacturing. We moved towards a deeper understanding of what sub-verticals our users were interested in. And I saw across these sub-verticals in financial services and healthcare and manufacturing, a recurring theme of needing these very technical and cross-VM cluster setups for scientific computing. And that's how I got to where I am today with high performance computing or HPC. I helped originate a partnership with a leading scheduler company called SchedMD that built the open source scheduler Slurm. And we created a joint offering of Slurm plus Google Cloud called Slurm GCP. And from there, our HPC business has only grown year on year. We have many large enterprise customers. And so I was doing business development for HPC. And then as I got deeper and deeper into the tech stack, building these products for our customers, I realized that I wanted to go closer to the core technology, and I transitioned to product management as of last year, still covering HPC. Anyway, that was a condensed version of the past 14 years. Long story short is I worn a lot of hats, done a lot of things. I've managed people at Google. I've launched new products. I've helped sunset products as well. And it's been a really fun and wild ride. And I'm happy to talk about, go into more detail about any of that.
And that's an amazing career. So you've been at Google for nearly 14 years now. Looking at your LinkedIn profile, which looks pretty well complete and nicely done, by the way, it looks like you had around 9 distinct roles during your time at Google, including, I know you and I overlapped, I think, during Google Fiber time. I think you were in Google Fiber. I was thinking about going there. Oh, yeah. I don't even think you mentioned that in your...
I didn't even mention Google Fiber. Yeah. I should talk about that too.
But that was a little blip in your illustrious career. Not a blip in a bad way, but just a business unit that really hasn't taken off yet, at least to my knowledge. So you started as an associate, basically taking tickets, essentially, right? Like customer issues, and you've moved up to a group product manager. And there's probably no more illustrious place to be a product manager at in the tech space than Google. So how did you do it? It's not easy to become a product manager at Google, and even internal with mobility. How did you think about your career and moving around all these times, looking back in your last 14 years, how much of it was just serendipity versus you trying to steer your career?
Firstly, thank you for calling my career illustrious. I think a lot of it is serendipitous, or has been, like me figuring things out along the way based on what is opportunistically available. Although I have also set intentions and set goals. But I started, like you said, as an associate, which is level 2. At Google, they actually don't hire level 2s in the US anymore because the salary range is too low. But I joined during the recession, and back then, finding any kind of job with benefits was a blessing. And so I took the opportunity. I think what's helped me navigate within Google is to pay attention to what things are getting investment, what things are getting attention, and also paying attention internally to how I'm learning and growing, or if I'm getting stuck, and if there's something that I want to figure out or to try. You'll notice that each of my roles have been pretty different, at least when I change functions. Like I went from support to partnerships to management to sales ops and strategy to business development to product. And so I've had to grow my skills. And in some cases, I did it in a very structured way, like with the part-time MBA. And in some cases, it was more organic in that I found mentors, or I found projects that needed resources and I volunteered to work on them so I could learn during that time. But I've always challenge myself on a regular basis. Usually I do this twice a year, where I do an inventory of what I'm working on, whether it's making an impact, what it is that I would like to continue doing or stop doing, and are there new capabilities that I want to develop, and where can I get those? And I also orient myself towards not necessarily only promotion, but like step ups. Like, how do I get to the next level, either like explicitly going to the next level or going to an opportunity that is much bigger than what I'm doing now that forces me to grow, like the product management transition. So I think it's been a mix of me like being deliberate about what opportunities I'm seeking out and how I'm using my finite amount of time. And also, you know, I've been part of an industry that's been growing so quickly, and cloud computing has been, even within tech, a fast growing sector. So I've been very fortunate in that the place where I started my career was one with a lot of growth potential, and therefore there were a lot of options within it for me to explore.
So within Google, it sounds like you were trying to, like when you were thinking about your next step, you were being deliberate of identifying areas that were invested behind or hot areas within Google?
Yeah, so actually Google Fiber is really important for one of my career pivots, because I joined Fiber wanting to try something different than what I'd been doing with Google Apps with Enterprise. I wanted to move away from B2B. I wanted to try something that was also like more experimental and different. And so I moved to Fiber wanting a new set of skills. But then Fiber, as you alluded to, was not a business unit that was fully figured out. And during my time with Fiber, I actually got laid off. My team was eliminated during a round of cuts. We were one of the first teams to be eliminated, and it was very abrupt. And it was right after we had launched our product. And I was pretty devastated when it happened. It was the first time this reduction had happened to me directly. And so I took it very personally and had some existential angst about it for sure. But I also was given the gift of search time. And I was given, I think it was 6 months of paid search time to look for an opportunity internally or externally. And at that point, you know, after licking my wounds and spending some time like building up my self-confidence again, I took a very disciplined approach to looking for a new role. I'm a spreadsheets person, so I created a spreadsheet and listed all of the people that I knew outside of Fiverr and their roles and their product areas. I also looked at our internal job listing board. I knew I wanted to look at a role, wanted to do an internal transfer, so I focused internally. So I looked at first my network and then also what was available on job listings of interest. And I set a goal of having at least 100 conversations by the end of the quarter with people that either I knew directly or that I found through the job listings or that I was referred to by those first conversations I had. And because a quarter is 13 weeks and 100 by 13 is roughly about 7 or 8, that was roughly like 1 or 2 conversations per day, which is actually pretty doable. I made sure that I scheduled those coffee meetings. I tried to have them in person when I could because I found this to be more effective. And I always went in saying, here is what I'm good at. Here is what I'm looking to do. And, oh, if you can't help me, which is totally fine, do you know 2 or 3 other people that I should go talk to? And so using that method, I was able to get to, ultimately, I think I had about half that many conversations before I found like some good leads that converted into interviews and eventually offers. But I just forced myself to maintain this ongoing outreach. And I actually made some really good friends along the way from people referring me to other people. Didn't ultimately turn into roles, but they became friends, which was a really nice side benefit. I've since told other people to do the same when they're looking for roles, that really it's pipeline management and you got to get your top funnel. It's a volume play. You got to reach out, got to do the legwork. And I know you offer this advice as well. It's really about leveraging your network, but you have to put in the effort. You have to make those connections, reach out to people, talk to them, and be clear on what it is you want in those conversations.
Exactly. And I think that's actually how we met, thinking back on it, because I think you were on the Fiverr team and I was very interested in Fiverr. I think Mike Buckley put us in touch with each other when you were on the Fiverr team. And then I think you had reached out to me when you got the 6 month opportunity with Fiverr. I wasn't at Google anymore, but I think you had reached out to me to ask for some feedback on a team you were looking at internally at Google where I left. Like, I think our paths crossed both ways. I think you were really kind to me when I was looking internally for Fiverr, and then you reached out to me. And I think I scared you away from the team that I was on, that I was previously on.
Which was so valuable, and I really appreciate. And that's actually another really important piece of advice is when you are looking for a role, it may feel like you don't have a lot of options, but really at that point you are a hot commodity because you are like an open available resource. And so if you have an offer, if you have interest from the other party, it's really important that you vet them, because before you commit to them, you have a lot of power. And once you do join a team, it can be really hard to leave them. And knowing that they're not a good fit for whatever reason ahead of time will save you so much heartache. And the longer I work, the more I realize it's about the people. You saved me a lot of heartache by warning me off of a team that was not a good fit.
I'm glad I was able to avoid a little heartache for you. And then most recently, you made a switch from like the sales organization to product. And that is not an insignificant switch to make, especially at Google. Everybody wants to be in product. And I don't think everybody knows what product is. So how would you describe what product management is at Google?
Yeah. So I did make that switch as of Q3 of last year. It took me about 9 months and to complete. And I can talk through at a high level what that entailed for people who are interested in learning more. At the end, we'll say how you can reach out to me and I can go into more details. So products can be many things. At Google, it's really about being the GM, the general manager of a set of products and solutions that enable a customer to use what it is that you're creating better, more easily, more quickly to serve a specific critical user journey or set of critical user journeys and user needs through creating a bundle of features and capabilities, which we call a product. And it's about going from that first user pain point need all the way through creating the product requirements doc and understanding of what it is that we need to build to meet those needs to marshaling resources and creating the business plan for getting that built, to launching it, pricing, and continuous iteration. I know it can mean a lot of things at different companies, but at Google, it's really being this like overall coordinator, quarterback, if you want a sports analogy, who manages without authority. This is actually a very important aspect of being a PM at Google, is that you don't have direct reports. The software engineers you work with report up through a different management chain than yours. You are usually an individual contributor, or if you are a manager, you manage other PMs who also have to manage without authority. So it's really about how do you influence others without being able to tell them directly what to do? How do you build consensus? And then how do you work really cross-functionally? Because all of those things that I described require multiple teams to coordinate together to execute.
And when you say you're the general manager, and I've worked with product managers across multiple different companies. So Facebook, American Express is like a general manager. I was at Salesforce. But as a general manager, like, are you actually managing the business side? Do you focus on the P&L as well?
Yeah, for at least one of the products that I'm managing, I am overseeing the P&L. I'm not quoted. Our sales teams have quota. I do not carry quota, but I do have a purview or a mandate to drive the P&L of a specific SKU in the case of that product that I'm owning. And so we are very much close to the economics of the deals, close to how are things priced, how are things discounted, what regions are they available in, what does our pipeline look like, what are the stages of the opportunity, once the deal lands, how soon are we able to revenue because we've delivered the product to the customer as specified. At least on the enterprise side, it can be very much like a sales mechanics, a role that requires a lot of sales mechanics. And so I think that's why my previous experience on the sales side, on the go-to-market side, was germane to my current role as a PM, especially because I was staying within cloud. So I was working on cloud customers, partners, deals before, and I continue to do so in my new role.
But to get to become a product manager at Google, especially, you need to be technical. You need to be passing yep. technical interviews. So as you moved internally from the sales side to the product side, you had to do some coding or technical interviews?
Yes, that's right. I've been doing various technical things for a while, but not as an official roles, not as official responsibility with my roles. So I went to a magnet high school, went to Bergen County Academies, the Academy for the Advancement of Science and Technology, which is a very pretentious name, but it's a science and math high school. And one of the things that we were required to take starting as freshmen was a coding course. And so I started programming in high school and I continued doing that throughout high school. And then during my undergrad, I was helping with our lab research groups, like admin research computing setup. And I was doing that just because I had the capabilities and interest. And it was one of the reasons that Google recruited me, was because I was working in that capacity for the Center for Decision Sciences, helping set up a remote computing cluster for one of our risk-seeking card selection task experiments. And even though I didn't use these skills necessarily in my sales role, they were still there lying dormant. And so when the time came for me to do technical interviews, I did have to brush up. And I did wind up going through a full interview panel because there are a couple of ways that you can transfer at Google from non-tech to tech. One of the ways is through a rotation. So you can do a 20% up to 100% rotation with a product team, be a PM in practice for 6 months, 9 months, a year. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, you have a set of artifacts that you can present as part of your hiring packet, which are the documents, the things that you have built during your rotation. Mm-hmm. Or you can do a full interview panel, like you go through interviews and then your interview data is used in your hiring packet. I chose the latter route. And so I had to go through, as if I were an external candidate, a full set of interviews. And there are ways to prepare for these. I'm sure your listeners are able to find these resources. If you look for like PM interview tips or sample questions, you can find a lot of guides out there for how to approach a PM set of interviews. And then for the technical interviews, because I was staying within HPC, I knew the characteristics of the systems that would be evaluated or that I would be asked about. And so I was able to speak to them in some detail and with some level of familiarity and competency.
How much do you think you actually need those technical skills in your role? So I know you work with SWE, software engineers, so you need to be able to talk their language and communicate with them and influence without authority. But how much do you actually need your technical skills in your day-to-day work?
Yeah, I think it depends on the type of PM that you are. And I see a lot of types of PMs across Google. There are PMs that are more outbound and more go-to-market focused. They take products that are ready to go off the shelf, and it's about how you package it, how you price it, how you put it into the field, and what are the routes to market for it to reach customers. Then there are PMs who work on very internal facing and deeply technical tools, where your users may be highly technical themselves and have a set of requirements that are very complex and dynamic. And then there are PMs that kind of are between those two extremes along the spectrum. And so I would say for myself, the technical know-how of HPC is important for the tools that we're building for HPC. And so working with my software engineers, I do want to understand the context and the content of their work, but the actual coding, like, I'm not writing the code, they're writing the code. And so I leave that to them. I have a really competent tech lead as well. My TL and I work really closely together. I have a great engineering manager. My EM and I work closely together. So I think it's about building up a team of competent technical folks around you and then understanding enough to be useful in unblocking things. That's what I do a lot actually with my SWEs, is figuring out, you know, where they are getting impeded in their workflow, like where they're not able to complete things. And then as a PM, I come in to try to solve that by meeting with the right folks, by identifying where we have resource gaps and finding resources, by advocating for them. So really keeping my SWEs, like, not necessarily smooth, but like clearing away obstacles that prevent them from doing what they're really good at. I can help them with the things around that they may not be as interested in doing. And that's not necessarily all technical stuff.
And let's just share some acronyms with our listeners here. So SWE is a software engineer called developers at some other companies. I think Amazon calls them SDEs, software development engineers, which I think are fairly similar roles. And then HPC, I know you and I were talking about that before the podcast, but just tell the listeners in 60 seconds or less what HPC stands for and what it is.
Sure. So HPC stands for high performance computing. And you can think of it as creating these, we call them supercomputers, but they're taking essentially a lot of individual computers and connecting them together. And for that, you need certain networking requirements, you need certain types of storage, and you need a lot of virtual machines. So cloud is really great for this. And stitching it together, you can then use this powerful supercomputer to solve computationally intensive workloads, things like engineering simulation, drug discovery, where you're looking at a lot of different potential molecules that could be targets for specific compounds, and recently AI ML models, like Gen AI models, training those models. You could run them on these HPC systems. So it's a really neat field. I've love talking about HPC, but it can be a little bit daunting when you hear the acronym at first, even when it's spelled out. It's like high performance computing. Oh, what does that mean? Just it's a lot of compute stitched together to solve these really interesting problems that I'm sure many of us are hearing about.
Thank you for sharing that and explaining that for us lay people like myself. And then you went back for your MBA at Berkeley, not too shabby of an institution. What was your thought process in going back for that? Was that something you needed, wanted? How did you think about doing that? And I think you went back for your MBA before your children, right?
I did. Yes. Yeah.
You also have two kids besides like this ridiculous career at Google and getting your MBA. You also have two kids. And I think you got your MBA 2016 to 2017 or something around there.
Yeah. I graduated, that's right, 2017 with my MBA. I had realized around like the 2014, 2015 time, or 2013, 2014, that I wanted to get an MBA because I was working very closely with an SVP. She was the COO for Enterprise, and she had an MBA. And she, prior to being COO for Enterprise, had been COO of a public company and had done other executive roles. And she was a mentor, is a mentor to me. And so when I was working so closely with her, I observed how the MBA had shaped her thinking. She herself also advocated for an MBA and said that it was for her immediate career progression, for her trajectory into the C-suite. And so I was fortunate to have a very clear role model who had gotten an MBA and was a senior business leader. And then I was considering full-time to begin with. Being in the Bay Area, I was looking at Stanford and Berkeley, and also having gone to Columbia for undergrad, I was looking on the East Coast too. But what happened around the time I was applying was that my husband's company went through layoffs and he got laid off. And after he got laid off, he started his job search. But as he was looking for his new role, he realized that the instability of working for somebody else, of potentially going through another layoff, was not something he wanted to re-experience. And so he decided to start his own business. And we realized that going from two salaries to potentially no salary while he started his business would really shorten his runway and blunt his risk appetite. And he was very supportive. He said, if you want to go full-time, I'll find a full-time traditional role, but I really want to start my own thing. And so then I shifted to thinking about part-time instead, because I realized if I could maintain the full-time job at Google, and not to mention the benefits, I'm really big on healthcare benefits. So having healthcare for both me and my husband and a regular steady income would give him the ability to grow his own venture. So then I looked into part-time programs, and there really were only two or three out there that were worth considering. There was Berkeley, where I eventually went. UCLA also has a program, and Wharton has a program part-time. I wanted to go in person to class. I wanted to have that in-person community experience because originally I wanted to do full-time. So Berkeley, being in the Bay Area, was the most obvious choice for me. So I applied and luckily got in. But yeah, I really enjoyed doing the MBA, even though it was very hard to do it part-time. It definitely was a challenge. But I got to connect with people from a lot of different fields. I made really good friends from the program. And I think it also was ultimately a really powerful addition to my abilities, my skills, and made me a more effective leader. And it didn't hurt that Google actually reimbursed for part of the tuition through their education reimbursement program. That also helped defray costs. Again, during the early startup years, we were running pretty lean as a household, so every little bit helped.
Yeah, and I totally understand why you would do it part-time, giving up Google compensation, Google RSUs, health benefits, all that stuff made tons of sense. What was attracting you to the full-time? What do you think you might have missed out on besides working probably 8 hours a week between your MBA and Google? What initially attracted you to the full-time, if like money wasn't an object and your husband had health insurance and all that stuff? What do you think you might have missed out on?
Yeah, I think the full-time program, at least compared to part-time, tended to draw people who are earlier in their careers and who were maybe more open to bigger pivots or changes. And so I think biggest thing that might have been different, and it's hard for me to know this with having not done the full time, was the kind of the quality or the characteristics of the network. I think my fellow students might have skewed a little bit younger. They might have come from a different mix of sectors, and they might have had a different trajectory. Although the mid-career professionals that make up my network from the part-time program are doing some really interesting things now that we're like 5-6 years out of our, 7 years. It's almost 10 years now out of our MBA program. They're doing really cool entrepreneurial, unexpected things in their careers. And so I'm really enjoying seeing that. I don't think like the full-time program is the only option for people if they're also still interested in maybe staying. And the other reason that part-time worked for me was that I knew I wanted to continue to be in tech. I think if I wanted to pivot out of my sector, if I wanted to change my role dramatically, that full-time might have been a better launch pad for that. But since I knew I wanted to stay in tech, I had a good thing going with Google. Part-time was a good solution for me.
I went full-time to Columbia Business School, and the full-time is different than the executive or the EMBA, I find, in terms like there's usually more mature, not like older people in that the EMBA programs, the part-time program. But a little secret is that you still have access to all 55,000 alumni that are on LinkedIn, whether they were full-time, part-time. I don't know if they have an online program, but that's something that you still get that value out of having a Haas MBA. So you can still reach out to everybody. When you were displaced, or I don't know what euphemism Google calls it, when you had the 6 months to find your job, it sounds like you didn't seriously consider external opportunities at the time. You were all in on like finding something internal at Google, like your 100 meetings in the quarter. Were those all focused on Google, or were you like dipping your toes externally and using that as an opportunity as well?
I definitely looked externally as well. I knew that my first priority was an internal transfer, but I was interested in seeing what my market value was and also understanding what was emerging. I knew I didn't want to go to another like large corporation. Like I was already at Google, so I wasn't looking at like the Facebook, Apples, the Amazons of the world. Like I wasn't interested in. For me, that was like similar enough to what I had at Google. And it was like, I don't really want to go from one similar environment to the other. So I did look at a number of startups. Through my network, I was referred to a couple of founders. And so I spoke to them about their companies, about their growth plans, about their gaps. I was really interested in like where what they were missing, what they needed, and if I could help out. And what I was looking for was a place where I could provide differentiated value, where I was someone who could really make a difference in the future of the startup, not to be arrogant or say that like it had to be me, but just like where like it would matter that I was part of the team. And I did get pretty far along with two startups in those discussions, but ultimately I didn't feel like it was quite right. But I do maintain connections with those founders, and I think very highly of them. And tech is a small sector, and the Bay Area is small. So it actually really benefits us to like keep in touch and to cultivate those relationships. But yeah, there was one opportunity with a Chinese national company that was looking to launch their US entity. That was really interesting, but ultimately was not a good fit. And I'm trying not to like share too many details about it because there's like competitive, but the TLDR is like the role was to be the business development lead for the gaming sector of their US. And this was a company that played very big, like they were very prominent in gaming. They were trying to launch a US-based office centered on gaming, and I would be the first one in leading that team, building it out and developing gaming partnerships with all of the major CSPs, as well as with like media publishers and media companies. But the reason I ultimately did not go for it is that I am not a gamer and I do not have subject matter expertise in it. And one of the things that they asked me to do, we were in multiple conversations, was this is a game that is going to be released soon. Like, why don't you take it home and play it over, I think this is right before winter break. They're like, why don't you spend like the next 2 weeks playing this game? Come back and tell us what you think. And I was like, okay. So I took the game and I went home and I set it up and I really did not enjoy the experience of playing it. But then I realized it wasn't unique to that game. It was just, I really don't enjoy. And if this was going to be like the type of work that I was expected to do, in addition to like the work that I'm interested in doing, I was like, oh no, this is not a good fit. I'm sure for some listeners, it's like, oh my gosh, you get to play like, yeah, a not yet released game as an interview. That's so cool. Wow. But for me, I'm not big on gaming. I love reading. I love, my hobbies include like hiking and weightlifting. Gaming is not, it doesn't scratch that itch for me. Yeah. And so that's actually how I chose not to go that route. It's a cool opportunity and I still keep tabs on how they're doing, because I think they're a cool company, but I'd be fooling myself if I were to join that team.
Yeah, you got to be interested in what you're doing. Or at least not loathe doing 2 weeks of homework playing a video game.
It felt like homework, exactly. I was like, this should not feel this hard.
Yeah, awesome. So we're running a little low on time, Annie, but so I want to finish this up with two last questions. And you've had a phenomenal career. I've been very impressed with how deliberate you've been with your path and how you've proactively reached out and created opportunities for yourself. What one piece of sick career advice would you like to give our audience here about what either has worked for you throughout your career or looking back, something else that you would have done differently? So what's a great piece of sick career advice you want to leave our audience with?
Yeah, we didn't really talk about this, but I am a mom and I have two young kids. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I took my maternity leaves while at Google. And then I came back and both times I pushed really hard after coming back for something different. So I got promoted after my first child. And then after my second child, I transitioned over to product. And doing that was actually very difficult with young kids because you have to take on more responsibility. It takes up more time and energy. And for many of us, that's the time when you don't want to. But one of the role models that I found is President Shafiq, who is the newest university president of Columbia University. I recently met her at a reception, and she and I were talking about being working moms with ambition, especially during the time we have young kids. And her advice to me, which I realized I'd been living, but I hadn't said before, was there is a lot of pressure on women, especially when you have young kids, say under the age of 5, to take a step back, to be the ones to take on more of the work of taking care of those kids. And if it's possible for you to not do that, don't take your foot off the pedal. Keep going. Keep on pushing yourself if you want to, because that is a time where there's so much societal pressure and gender norms and so much that tells you, hey, you could be the one to step, or like you could put your ambitions, your aspirations to the side. And if people want to do that, I also fully support that. But I didn't want to do that. And I wasn't hearing that message that loudly. I actually was getting a lot of mom guilt, a lot of even from like people who are really supportive of me. They were like, hey, you don't have to try so hard right now. Like your kids are little, you could just step back. And what I wanted to hear at that point was someone to be like, hey, I was in your shoes, or I know someone who is like you, and they wanted to keep on pushing, and they had little kids, and they did it, and you can do it too. So just keep pushing. So if there's like any listener out there who needs this message, like if you don't want to keep on being super like pushing forward, plugged in, even when your kids are little, I give you permission to do that. Especially if you're the birth parent and you're going to get a lot of like internal and external messaging that you should not do that. I still think you can. And I did it. And my kids are great. They're doing great. And you have to build a support network. You have to have scaffolding. You have to have care. And I'm very fortunate to be able to afford that and to have that. That's my advice specific to the parents of young children, and in particular the mothers. If you want to keep on pushing, even when your kids are young, you can.
Yeah, no, I think it's good that you made that conscious choice of what worked for you and your family.
Yes, and it's not for everybody. But if you want to, please don't feel guilty about prioritizing your career and yourself, because I know you love your kids and you're going to figure out how to take care of them also.
Exactly. No, that's a great piece of advice. And everybody has a different situation, depending on what other support scaffolding, as you call it, depending on your spouse or your partner, or if you have one or not, it all plays into the equation. And I think it's great how you were thoughtful about how you wanted to balance that in your career. And then the last question I have for you, Annie, is where can people find you and learn more from you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. I think my short link is just Annie Ma Weaver, like linkedin.com/Annie Ma Weaver. So feel free to reach out. I'm always happy to connect. And if any of the things that I talked like sparked your interest and you want to ask more questions, I'm happy to have that discussion with you.
Awesome, Annie. I've really been fortunate that yours and I's paths crossed and we talked career stuff as I was trying to go to your team. You were trying to stay away from my team and all throughout the careers. But I'm glad that we met during our Google days. I'm glad we're still in touch. And I'm really happy for you about like how your career, your illustrious career, as I call it, has been so impressive. And also juggling the kids and business school and everything else and weightlifting. And I think there was something else that you said that you do, hiking. So was it hiking yeah. You said hiking and weightlifting?
Yeah, yeah. I recently started a new lifting routine, which I will not bore people with, but yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know how you get it all done, but awesome for you. I am jealous with all your energy and impact. And thank you so much for taking a little time with a Sick Career audience here.
Thanks, Alan. This was so nice to be part of, and I appreciate you spending time with me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye.